Accession number 23200, Reel 1.
Mr. Kidjack, Reel 7. Now, we've sort of been looking at some general things, but let's go. When you joined the ship, they were doing some modifications, taking out some of the Americans' equipment, you know, because they'd been built in America, as you know. What do you remember of that? Do you remember them? Do you remember what they took out or what was happening?
Well, they had big washing machines in, you know, big washing, you know. They were taken out to make more storage room for carrying ammunition. It was a laundry room that was taken out. The only thing that was left in was a big dryer. That was left in. But the luxury, what the Yanks believed and lived in, was all taken out and it was replaced by ammunition lockers. Because we thought it was a waste of time, waste of space. They said, if you got a water toilet, a bucket, anybody could do their washing in a bucket. Who wants the laundry, you know? Well, I know the difference between using a bucket and using the laundry, because when you did your washing in a bucket, it was hard going. But the Yanks, it was luxury. They have a laundry. They wouldn't wash in a bucket. I couldn't tell you about the upper structure, what was modified there, because I can't remember, because at the time, with being new on a ship, in that one, I wouldn't know. If I had been in commission of the ship, I would have noticed things. But we're coming on, I would say, no, I couldn't tell you about the upper structure. All I could tell you about was the luxury that was down below. And that was taken away from the lads. I can understand what the idea was to take these things out, because it gave you more ammunition lockers, because you needed all ammunition you needed. You couldn't throw laundry at enemy ships, you could throw shells, stuff like that. That was beauty about it. But on the other structure, I could not tell you whether there was any modification.
They went on some anti-submarine exercises, sort of locally. What do you remember of them?
Well, what he used to do is go around and used to test out what radar and Aztecs and stuff like that, testing for submarines. Used to go around and used to pull what you call one ship, used to pull a target. It was a target, it was pulled on a, what I call, on a wire, and used to have target practice. Now we used to test all types of guns on a target practice, you know. Doesn't matter if it was small, big or large. You had another one, used to test, the pick-up mines. You know, mines used to get loose, and used to show you how to, if you saw a mine, how to get rid of it, how to sing it. Now, used to fire at it. Now, what used to fire, you know, you used to use rifle fire. Now, the idea using rifle fire was to hit one of the prongs, because hitting the mine, you could hit the mine with a bullet, but it wouldn't explode. How mine exploded is to hit the prongs, because the prongs were sticking out, and that was the first thing that used to hit the side of a ship, and that used to do the damage. But the base of the mine, you could hit it with God knows what, it would never go off. You had to be good. You had to be a really good worker. You know what I mean? You had to be put a head of prong on a mine. You had to be a crack shot. You know. I did it later but not when I first went to the colour. But a lot of the lads used to fight at them. And if you hit it with a shell of a hauling gun, you would miss it, you know. But it was that prong that was on the mines that one. But they showed you how to tackle these things, you know. Also, showed you, if it got too near the ship, what you had to do used to use one of the oars out of the boat, and he used to use it gently, and he said, one after another, he used to pass it round the end of the ship. The ship wasn't going, it was standstill. Just move it around gently to get rid of it, you know. Because if you hit it, one of them prongs would set it off. But it used to be, he used to show you how to do it and how to thing on. True, we came across them, and what I call it, in the on when we were on duty, we did come across heavy mines or loose mines, and they showed you how to do. You used to do what you call a run on depth charges, you know, which you would have called, you know, which used to fire. I mean, you had depth charges, you used to fly off the side. I believe they were about 400 weight in weight. They used to fly off the side of the ship. And you had depth charges, heavy weights, which 500 weights, they used to drop off the end of the ship. There were deeper ones, that one. And that we had what you call, another what I call, form was using for detecting submarines was hedgehogs. They came off the forecastle, the front of the ship. They were fired off like little small bombs, and they went down, you know. They're the only ones, stuff that you fired off the ship, and you could go over the top and take the force of the explosion underneath. That's the only one. You couldn't do it with depth charges. You could do it with hedgehogs, you know. But you got a true sounding, a true, what do you call it, hit if you ever got one, which we did. We had, you know.
So you were, this is what you were doing.
Training before.
Practicing. And all this submarine and anti-mine work.
They were tried every, they tried every, what do you call it, gun, everything, what do you call it, you had to do when you went to sea, that one, in the trials, you know. Yeah, we tried everything, even what I call it, lowering the boats and finding out, you know, exactly what would happen if the ship was, what I call it, sinking. We tried all them sort of things. Everything had to be tried. Whatever was on board that ship, it had to be used and had to be tried before we ever got, we call, we did convoy duty.
The first convoy was in some ways the worst one that they did, was in November. When they went into the Bay of Biscay with convoy SL-139. Now, you probably don't, you know. And this was quite a rough convoy. What do you remember of that?
That would be the one, that would be the one where we were attacked by the Henkel bombers.
That did happen then, yeah.
Then, that one, it is. Well, that was very rough, that one, isn't it? We had, if I remember rightly, you know, we were on what I call, we're called action stations, on a Bay of Biscay, because when you went through the Bay of Biscay, it was a very rough, was one of the roughest part of the convoy, you know.
Well, let's ask about the rolling, because when you got out into the sea, the ships had a reputation for rolling, the captain class. I know you weren't seasick again, but what did you think of the rolling? How bad was it?
You see, on the calm, you see, when you got a swell on, the ship used to go up and down, up and down. Now, that affected more people with seasickness, because you think, if you had the dinner, and the ship was going up and down, you know, your stomach was going with it, you know, and the next thing you knew, if you couldn't control your stomach, it was over the side. A rough sea that was choppy, you know what I mean? No matter which way the ship went, you know, it was thrown this way, thrown it that way, you know. It was really going through a storm, this that one. That used to give an appetite. And I loved it, what I call a rough sea, because it used to give me a good appetite, because I could guarantee 50% of the ship's company wouldn't eat. And the more that was left, the more you got. But on a swell, they would eat it, and then it was thrown up, you know. Because on a swell, because you didn't know it was going to come up or go down. But it didn't affect me. But rough sea, I loved the rough sea. When I seen a rough sea, and you couldn't stand on your feet or go in this way, you know, I could guarantee I would sit down and I would have two or three dinners. No bother. and I thought I enjoyed it.
And this was, it was pretty rough in the Bay of Biscay.
Yes, well, it was. You got in the Bay of Biscay, in the Bay of Biscay, you got more of a rough sea than what you did of a swell, because it was choppy, you know. We were up on one convoy, were attacked, you know, and were attacked by Henkel bombers that came over, you know. And I don't know, they seemed to pick us, with being the smallest, you know, being an escort. I said, we'll try us out first, you know. And I had these, what you call, flying bombs underneath the wings. They used to let go, you know, and just try and guide them onto the work, you know. And I can also remember, what it called, those two workers came over. One hit one of the ships, but this one, it just missed our ship. I can also remember that. It was, the lads were watching it. It was a case of, when you watch it, it's just like, you know, you think it was going to be a seagull. You were going to land on the ship or miss the ship, you know. It was something new, because we didn't know what they were. We had an idea what they were afterwards. But this one, it just missed our ship. One of them hit the other ship. We knew the damage it had done, you know. But it was new. But the point, what it called, with the Henkel bombers, what it called, we were ordered off, but then what it called, shooting down, you know. Because it's like the thing is, you have your senior, what I call it, ships, you know, and your convoys, you've got to do as you're told, you know. Your job is looking out for submarines, you know, not as not the aircraft. Leave them things to us. What we didn't know at the time was, for all he was dropping these, what I call it, these bombs on us and this, you know, we didn't know at the time, but we knew now that he couldn't make his way back, because you hadn't the fuel aboard to take him back, you know, even if he was fit enough to get back, you know, because a lot of them never got back, not Henkels, because they went too far out, and when they went back, they just automatically ditched themselves, because they weren't what you call long distance.
So you weren't shooting with the pom-pom or the Ehrlich into the Bofors?
Well, we did.
You won the pom-pom, didn't that
happen? I was on the Bofors out. I finished up on the boat, and the Bofors would have caught the lads out on the Bofors.
When the Henkel came across?
When they came across. Because the thing is, it was something, you know what I mean? For all of us coming round in the start, yeah, we were watching them going round. It was more like a seagull flying about, you know, being controlled, you know.
But you weren't firing with the Bofors?
Well, I think we're mostly amazed. I can't remember, what I call anybody finally, you know, at the time, you know, because it was something out of the ordinary, you know, because we knew exactly where it came from, you know, but we knew where it was going, you know, which it missed, you know.
Now,
there's not a lot that would turn on and say that, you could remember that day, you know, that particular time, you know, or we know that it missed with, you know.
Now, a bit later, there was quite the Bentinck and the Calder made quite a lot of depth charge attacks on a submarine, which they don't know whether they sunk or not. You know, it's not one of the official claims. Do you remember that at all?
Well, we did a lot of what I call depth charge. You know, you see, with the Flotilla, there was six ships. There was three diesels and three steam. Now, the thing is, you know, the steam ones, you know, we could. In my opinion, I think at the time, we could travel faster, harder, different places, you know, whereas diesel couldn't. So we used to be sent out on a wide berth, trying to track these submarines down in this area. A steamship, I found out we could pick up, whether it was the experience of the people that they was on Aztecs or like that, I don't know, but we all seemed to pick up ping submarines up, and we used to start attacks off, dropping submarines, you know, air dropping depth charges. But whether it was the people that that was on Aztecs, you know, or whatever it was, or whether they were better at the job and what the other ships were, but all seemed to be involved in any attack on submarines. We did. You dropped a lot of tough charges. At times, you used to think, you know what I mean, did all the court, you know, get, it's just score anything. Odd times, you know what I mean, you got stuff brought up, you know, whether it was false or it was, you know, on one particular thing. I can't remember at the time, but I know we did one, and we brought a part of human body up, part of his body up, and it was brought on deck. And they brought, they would have called Sigby attendant, ask his opinion about it, and he said it was a lung of somebody that had just been killed. He said, well, the only way we can do with it, he says, we'll put it in and freeze it, so when we get sure, we'll have proof, you know, if it's this. Because there was one or two more things, clothing, stuff like that, it was all collected. You had to pick up as much as you could to prove that you had some, you know, whether it was right or what was wrong. Because subs used to send stuff up, the what it called, to fool you to say that it's been sung and it wasn't, you know. Sometimes you went over the top, you got a ping, you know, which you thought was a submarine, but at the end of the day, it could have been a wreck. If it wasn't a wreck, it could have been a school of fish.
Now, the Calder had some engine room problems during that convoy. Do you remember that?
Yes, well, I think at the time, I think the propellers went out wrong. Strapped around the propellers. I don't know if it was some kind of cable or something got strapped around or got something on. And we happened to be going round and round. And we had to get somebody to go over the side and clear it. But I know the ship was going wrong. We lost control of the rudder, you know. Whether it had something to do at that particular time with the weather. I can't, offhand, I couldn't make it tell you if that was the case.
Anything else you remember about that first big convoy? I think they went to the Azores.
We had to go down by the Azores. I can remember that first one we went on, and I'll tell you all I can remember is, we seemed to be on that day, we seemed to be at action stations for about nearly 2 to 3 days, and that was day and night, you know, that was our sleep. The only sleep we got, if I had a chance to sleep, and that was on, when you were on, what it called, action stations.
Now you were on the Beaufort then, weren't you?
I was on the Beaufort.
So what would you do? What was it like on action stations on the Beaufort? What would you do for that length of time?
It's the same. It's been an ordinary seaman. You had to make sure that that gun had to be fully loaded with shells to fire. But we didn't do what you call a lot of, what I call a gunfire at the time. Because our job was concentrate on the submarines, concentrating on the convoys, because the submarines can take attention away from what you do. The aircraft can take attention away from the submarines. Now, with us being bigger ships, we can deal with that. This is what you should tell us. Now, with yours, it's been smaller ships. Your job is to track submarine. So leave the gunfiring to us. We deal with that. You deal with the subs. You've got the power. You've got the, what we call it, the depth charges, the turn and twist. In other words, is we are more on the hunt for submarines and more than what we're on for aircraft. But know what? We did fire, but we didn't do a great lot because what we had to do is what to do.
So you were just basically, what were you doing on the gun? Just standing too on the gun?
Well, you just had to wait there.
Which Beauforts were you on, do you remember? Or was it different ones?
It was mostly on the quarter deck, everything would be on. I couldn't tell exactly what was on the quarter deck, you know.
So you just sat there, basically?
Well, you had to. I mean, you're not a case of sitting, it's a case of standing, you know. And waiting, you know, waiting to get the orders for action stations. Now, as I say, you used to look out for things, you know. It depended on what time of the day it was or what time of the night it was. Is that, you know? But I think that particular time, I think it was mostly at night when it first started, you know. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, it went on for about 2 days. I can't tell you roughly, it was 2 days or 3 days. Well, I know it's been a long day. I know we lost a lot of sleep over it.
What was it? How tiring was it? How did the fatigue affect you? What sort of state were you in?
Well, how it affected a lot of the lads was you see, with being a smoker and smoked cigarettes, if you could, what I call it, smoke a cigarette, you keep awake, you keep alert. And I would say, being a smoker myself at the time, and being a smoker now, I could go 24 hours, I could go 48 hours. But for a non-smoker, you wouldn't be able to do that. But the only trouble between a non-smoker and a smoker, there's none who could smoke when you're on duty, because you wouldn't allow them. No, it made it harder for both of us. So, with a smoker, it made you more tired. The reason why it made you more tired is, because what was in your mind is, when I'm going to get a cigarette? I just need that one cigarette to calm me down. And once you calm down, you could go a few more hours without a one. You know? But that was in your mind. Now, that used to make you tired thinking about it. Now, as a non-smoker, person that one, he, what do I call it, he could drop off asleep at any time, and I found that out. But a smoker, he'd keep awake, because if he fell asleep, he'd miss his smoke. But a non-smoker, he'd fall asleep, he didn't know what happened, he would miss anything, you know. This was the difference between two persons on a gun, smoker and non-smoker. And I always found out, a smoker, he would last longer on, what do I call it, on accident, is a lot longer in a person. I put it another way. I found this out. I may be wrong about this, but I found this in my mind. I found out a person that smoked. And I found out in different accident stations, not this particular one we're talking about now, the one that's happened in the past. I found out a smoker. If I had to, what I call it, pick a gun crew, if picking, look at what I call it, help one another and a gun, and it was five people or seven people, I'd pick five smokers or seven smokers. Because one smoker is a person, he lights his cigarettes, he looks after one another, his mind was more settled. Now, a non-smoker, I found out, used to get edgy. In other words, you got frightened. I found that out, a non-smoker. A smoker, he would debate, he would sit and have a cigarette and think about things. He would think, is that one? And what I call it, a non-smoker wouldn't. He was just the opposite. So at the end of the day is, I found out, when you were firing guns, and you weren't practicing, no matter what practice it was in, real. I found out, a non-smoker, he used to keep crouching down about that armour plating. He was nerves, got the better of him. A smoker was the opposite, in his record, you know, he was more calm. Whether it was a drug that was smoking, or whether it was a cigarette, that there was, but when nerves seem to be more subtle in a non-smoker. But I found out a lot of non-smokers, when we were ordering an action station up, in one particular time, I can always remember, and I only hope I was talking to them when I've been to his reunions, when one particular case, you know, we're going a bit ahead of our time here. when we did bring a submarine up on the surface.
Hang on, I'll save that, because that's something we're going to come to. I'll make a note to ask you about that. So anything else about this Bay of Biscay first convoy, or is that about?
Well, when we got down, when we got down, what I call it, down the street there, so what I call it, Gibraltar, that one, we had to wait overnight. So I think we laid off on the Azores, you know, islands, you know, at the time, because we couldn't go through because I had to lift the minefields at night and let us through, you know. And if I remember rightly, we did get through, but at a particular time, we did come across the submarine from Mississippi. We could tackle it, you know, going through the straits, you know. We seemed to have a lot more trouble getting the convoys in what I call in the Mediterranean, you know.
Well, shall I come on to, because you went on to going on to loads of convoys in the Mediterranean, the KMF convoys, and you were doing them from halfway through December 43, right to October 44, backwards and forwards.
That's from Liverpool
to Naples, mainly. What do you remember of those convoys? Because they were pretty routine, weren't they? There wasn't a lot of action on them, but it was an important job. They were troop convoys, but there wasn't a lot happening. What do you remember of them?
Well, the only trouble we're getting, you see, the only trouble is the war was getting on, you know, the fighting was getting on. We found out that the Mediterranean was a lot safer for to get in, you know, because, as I say, South Africa, you know what I mean, the Germans were departing themselves away from us for defending their own country, you know, like, such as Italy and God knows what. The most action we got was outside, that was on from the time we left Liverpool to pick up a convoy to the time we got down the streets of Gibraltar. That's why a lot of submarines, you know. That's when we did a lot more action, you know, regards anything else. But submarines were our biggest problem, you know. But I can guarantee, I'll be honest with you, all the time we're on convoy duty, I don't think we've ever lost a ship. If I remember rightly, I don't think it was one ship lost. We never lost a ship in the convoy, you know. But we did.
What was the routine like? On those Mediterranean convoys.
Well, you see, your routine. When you were working, it's the same. You know, you had to deal with a lot of things, that, such as if anybody you got, what I call, no matter what it was, on the what I call, on the depth charges, you know, for all you were known as seamen, and you were detailed on your gun, whichever it was, replacing for handling shells and God knows what, passing ammunition, you had to make yourself flexible, so if anything went wrong with what I call the depth charges, you give them a handout. But you didn't do their job, but you're just an assistant to help them, you know.
So and how would you help on the depth charge crews?
Well, if you were detailed on that one, just lifting the depth charges onto the work, the mountains, that would be, especially the ones that flow off the side, they had to be lifted. And of course, they used to be lifted by chains, if I remember rightly, you know, in the hoist. They used to be about 400 weight. I think you had to make yourself flexible regards a lot of things. You know what I mean? You had to help if anybody, you know what I mean? You were taught how to treat people if there was a fire on board a ship. You know? Or if anything got damaged by, shells from an enemy, you know? What to treat, you know?
So how would you, what were you taught? What do you remember of? It's sort of damage control and first aid. What do you remember of? Say first aid first. How far
well,
did they go?
If there was any damage to the ship, you know, the ship was whole like that, it had nothing to do with seamen. It mostly had to do with stores. Because it was their side, you know. Because they knew how to repair any part, you know, damage to the ship, you know. Regardless if there was any damage, we were taught if there was any damage to any of the guns or any equipment that you had to fire, we were taught that. We had to look after that. We were taught how to dismantle it. You know what I mean? If we've got a hauling gun, if one of the what are called balls blew, we knew how to dismantle it and put a new one in. But that was seamen and the lads are trained to be gunneries. But as regards to Stoker, he wouldn't touch anything like that. Stoker only looked after the bulkheads, if there was any damage damage, but we couldn't do that.